All right then, so it's 2:15. So let's get started with this. Thanks very much for coming along to this talk. I'm Andy Wigley. I'm a senior software development engineer in our DX TED group. So DX is developer experience. So our group does deep technical engagements with customers and breadth evangelism and stuff like that. And speaking at shows like this. So this talk is called Develop for the Universal Windows Platform. So this is one of those rarities at this show, a developer talk. So that's why they put us all out in the furthest reaches of the complex. But welcome to you all. So this is mainly about developer-oriented topics, but it's about a lot of the cool features that we are enabling in the Windows 10 development platform. And that's in a broad sense. So it's definitely not all about UWP. It's much more than that. So what is then the Universal Windows Platform? What are we talking about? So, you know, it's a platform that offers a lot of consistency right across our different devices. You know, great support for specialized capabilities for different devices, great configuration, high security, good management and capabilities for devices, and also like the mechanisms for making sure that updates get out for the OS and also for applications. And we do that through the Windows Store and also through Windows Store for Business. So it's a really important mechanism for getting stuff out there. And we've got all of these different bits of the platform and some things that that provide a number of kind of really unique experiences, such as Windows Hello. So Windows Hello is, you think it's just a cute way of signing into your Windows 10 machine. I have face recognition on this Surface Book here, and it's kind of nice. I don't have to type in a password. But it's not just a cute feature, because Windows Hello doesn't have to use biometrics. It could be just enabled by putting in a PIN code. But the reason for the power of Windows Hello is that it actually introduces two-factor authentication into the login process. So it's not just the PIN number a user anywhere, it's the PIN number on a specific device is where the authentication is happening. So really powerful, and where you've got biometrics, you can have fingerprint readers and facial recognition, and you can use that for authentication in your apps. It's not just at the OS level. So we have a talk on Windows Hello at this conference, so if you're interested in that, please check that one out. And we're continually innovating. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Ink, what we've done there, because that's kind of exciting. And we're always pushing the platform, trying to enable and open up new ways for users to interact with computers. So pen and ink is one of those things, and facial recognition and biometrics is another one. So new input models that really work with modern devices and give your users of your applications a really delightful experience. And all of this is on one SDK and one set of tooling. So you just it's really easy to simplify the development process. And then, as I mentioned before, the store there as a great channel for distributing applications and media across to your end users. And all of this is available on a whole bunch of different devices, which my PowerPoint is just, there we go. What's happened here? PowerPoint froze on me. A whole bunch of different devices. And this is the consistency, is a lot of the power of it as well, in enabling, opening up these all of these great features to a wide variety of different devices, including new stuff such as the Xbox and the HoloLens in this latest release. So, in terms of what we've brought in terms of the UWP API set, the anniversary edition update, which we released around about 7 or 8 weeks ago to market, has around, they tell me, 2,700 improvements. Definition of improvement probably means, I don't know, spelling typos in the documentation. No, it doesn't. There's a whole bunch of new APIs and corrections and updates. Really, really exciting things, such as, we have fixed a bunch of things, but the HoloLens emulator, the Ink toolbar and ruler that I'm going to show you, Action Center in the cloud. So we're starting to have notifications, the ability to sort of dismiss on one device and they don't annoyingly pop up on your other devices. So having that backed by the cloud enables up interesting and better usability around notifications. And other stuff like the single process background execution. Now, this is kind of cute. So if you have an app and it has a background task, until the recent release, you had to put the background task in a whole separate project. It had to be a component. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. You can now have your background tasks in your main process. And actually, I've got a demo right at the end of this that kind of illustrates the power of that and some of the things that it opens up for you. So a whole bunch of great new improvements, and that's platform-wide. But in fact, if you think about just, I'm going to start by looking at XAML. So how many of you here use XAML in your application development? Great, good. All right, so we've got a whole bunch of new features in XAML. And I'm going to just do a quick demo now just to illustrate some of those features. Okay, so this sample, I'm just going to run it first so you can see it start up. And then we'll call out some of these features on it. So this application, now it has a beautiful launch page. I'm actually not going to talk about that just yet because I'm going to circle back to it in about 15 minutes' time because it's a topic that deserves a little bit of a deep dive. But that's the new animation APIs, composition APIs, a really powerful API set for doing beautiful animations. Like I said, I'll come back to that. But we've got some other interesting features in here. First of all, that button over, I'll talk about that in a minute. That's a nice slate gray. If I log into this, give some stuff like there. Okay, and log into this application. Now, so there's a few things I wanted to call out on this. And actually, before I go into that, I want to just, let's start that again, but this time I'm going to dock it on the side and then we show you one of the really, almost the best feature of all, of the stuff I'm going to show. So this is the launch page. So I'm just going to now dock my app over on the left side there. Put Visual Studio over here. Hide all that. Now, so here's my XAML. I'm actually debugging this application. But the first thing is this. You see, we actually got some commented out XAML at the bottom. So I'm just going to uncomment that. Don't need to do that. And look, what about that? Now this is live debugging of XAML. So you can change your XAML on the fly while you're debugging, and your layout updates in real time. So this is amazing. I use this all the time. And this is if you know how it is. If you want to tweak the layout in XAML and it's not quite right, you have to kind of look at it. Oh yeah, I need to move that a few pixels over. You stop debugging. You go in. You change it. Sure, we have the design tools that kind of help a little bit. And then you run it again. No, still not right. You know. It's just burn cycles that. Whereas this, now you can actually do this in real time. Now, the version of Visual Studio I'm using here is Visual Studio 15, which is not 2015. It's V15, which is the next one. We're on preview 4, dev preview 4 of this now. So we've already been through 4 iterations. So I'm not sure when it's going to be released, but we're obviously well down the road towards getting to that goal. So this is a new feature in the brand new version of Visual Studio 15. The other thing the sharp-eyed amongst you may have noticed is that this is an animated GIF. Now, we didn't have support for that. Big ask from people is to allow people to use that in XAML-based applications. So now we're going to have lots of, like, cutesy little rain clouds and kittens doing things and all this sort of thing in your applications. And I'm sure the world will be a better place as a consequence. So that's right. We've got edit and continue in XAML, which is really, really cool. Now then, let's go back to full page, log in here. Let's look at the first thing here. We've got this menu here. Now, I'm a developer, you're developers. We love keyboard shortcuts, don't we? And in fact, users love that as well. Well, I can now hit my Alt key, and we've got accelerator keys. So we've now got access keys in the new version of XAML. So that's really, really cute, really nice. Now, let's just have a look at how that is done. Really, really simple. So I'm going to go to the dashboard. .xaml. Here is the XAML for that page you're just looking at there. And you can see here we've just got this new access key attribute you can put it on any framework control. So it's on the framework element, so the root element for all of our controls. So you can just define your access key here, and with the letter, you can internationalize that as well, of course. And then in order to get the actual tooltip to show up, we've got these other events associated with it here, which is access display requested. So when the user hits the alt key, then this event is going to fire, and access key display dismissed is the reverse of that. And if we just go and have a look at that, you can see that here, what we've got to enable this, first of all, in the initialization code for this page, we just set up some tooltips. There we go, setting up tooltips. Set the placement and set the tooltip on the particular buttons. And then when the access key display requested, all we're doing is simply showing those tooltips. So that's why the visual pops up when I hit the alt. And of course, when I hit alt again, that's dismissing that. So really, really, really nice, and that just works great. And so I can go into here, and I can go Alt M, and we go into the messages thing. So this is the next thing I want to show you here. So this is a list box, of course, here we go and say Atlanta is hot. So we send that message, and you see it's popping down at the bottom. In fact, we can. And we can say Ignite is awesome. We can pop that on the bottom of the list. And if I just, I'll hit send a few times, so we fill up the space, and you'll notice now that is filling in from the bottom and the list is scrolling up. So this is the classical chat message kind of window. And this is a good example of something that a lot of people have asked for, and it was actually one of those things you'd think, oh, that can't be hard, can it? And then you try and build it, and you find out actually it was incredibly hard. So the way we have enabled that is on the messages.xaml, really simple. That messages list view, here it is. All we've done is we have overridden the items panel. So the items panel is the control that dictates the actual container control that holds the items in your list view. And we have overridden the items panel template to make it an item stack panel, which it is actually by default, but the key thing is why we've done that is that by default, you have to override in this way so that you can set this new property on the item stack panel to keep last item in view. So the default is to fill in from the top, but keep last item in view gives you that auto scroll behavior. So that's the chat control feature that we've got in that items updated scroll mode. A big ask for people. Okay, what else can we show you in here? So here's report. Now there's so up to now I've shown you some XAML improvements, but there's also a bunch of improvements around data binding as well. So here we've got some items in here, and when you select one, you can see we get some data items associated with these headers come up on the right-hand side. And I want to just dig into the code and show you where this is coming from. So you see we get a title, we get a number, and then we get a currency value. So let's go and have a look at how that is done. So first of all, the data items that we're showing in that list are actually defined by this report view model class. This is a completely standard iNotify property change view model class, and it has some top-level properties that we can data bind against, name and title. But we've also got here a property called data, and that is of type dictionary string decimal, and it's a new dictionary of string and decimal. And in the page where we are looking at that, let's go off to report.xaml.cs. In here, when the page loads, we fill it in with the data. That's what we're looking at. But of course, the data property is a dictionary, so we're adding a key and a value, and a key and the value. So it's the same key in each case, but it's just a dictionary, so it's a very, very flexible data item. Now, you couldn't data bind directly against that in the past, but now you can. So let's go and have a look at the XAML for this. And in order to do that, you'll see that we have got, here we are, we use, this is the stack panel that was showing each of the data items on when we were showing each of those things when you selected an item in the list. And the first one is a standard selector report.title. That was a top level property on that view model. But here you see, you can actually key directly into a dictionary directly from your data binding statement. So now we're pulling out the budget value, which was the second item you saw in that list of data items. So that's really nice. But then let's look at the next line just down here, get formatted text. What is that? We're xbind to get something called get formatted text. And we are passing in a selected report thing. So what's going on there? Well, get formatted text is just a method in the target of the xbind, which in this case is the same class, which is this this report.xaml class. And you'll see that here, get formatted text is just a simple little helper method we've created in our code behind that allows you to do simple formatting right in your code. And why is this a good thing? Well, in the past, you'd have to write a whole value converter, you know, that whole all these extra classes, and then you'd have to declare them in your app.xaml, and then you'd have to refer to them. Well, you don't need to do that anymore. So you can do simple little formatting things straight away in your view models or in your code behind like this. So really nice little features, but things that are going to make your life a lot easier. All right, so that was just some of the investments we're making in the XAML platform. Next thing I want to do is related as well. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Windows Ink. So how many of you used to have a Palm Pilot or in the old days? Yeah, we all did. And what about even a pocket PC with a little stylus? You know, you'd be digging, trying to fill in an Excel spreadsheet with that little pointy thing. You know, it was kind of painful. So, you know, we've been trying to do writing on computer screens forever. And it's kind of, you know, we've kind of made do up till now. But we got to that nice sweet spot now where the computing technology we have to work with is getting good enough that we are starting that holy grail, if you like, of having people being able to write on a screen and it to feel like writing on paper. We are really, really close to that. Some would say we're there, but you do need you need the latest hardware, and with our Surface range of hardware, we've really drilled down on the hardware to make sure that the touch and inking experience is really first class. The thing that kills inking is, and I know, I'm sure you've all done this, you've taken delivery of a package at the front of your front door, and the guy hands over a device, which is usually running Windows CE or Windows Mobile, and they give you the stylus, and you're sort of meant to draw your signature. And you do something on the screen, and nothing doesn't end up looking anything like your signature. And the reason for that is that you're getting the visual feedback is this big latency, this big delay in that you draw on the screen, and nothing actually happens for long enough to make it an unnatural experience. But we really drilled down and get rid of that latency. So now, right on front of one of these screens, like a Surface Book or a Surface Pro, and similar recent hardware from our partners, is a really first-class experience. So the hardware is good. We've also got great software in the Anniversary Edition that means that this is kind of one of these emerging technologies that is still probably pretty niche for a lot of people, but we'll see over the next few years that people will start to get used to the idea of writing on their tablets, drawing on their tablets, along with other sort of emerging technologies like using speech to interact with computers, which is an area I'm working on a lot at the moment. So Windows Ink, what we've got in there is we've got this great Ink Canvas control, which enables inking. You just put that anywhere on your screen, and that you can now ink on that area. So you just put an Ink Canvas, and then we have an associated object called an Ink Presenter, which is something you work with in code, and that's, you can sort of say, okay, I'm going to allow inking with a stylus, or you say, okay, I'm going to allow touch, effectively drawing with your finger, so you can control that, or mouse, and great APIs, you can really customize this as well. There's been some really exciting stuff people doing to really customize the Ink platform, coming up with fantastic custom rulers and different ways of interacting. And APIs for recognizing written stuff on the screen and turning it into actual text that you can store. And you can save the strokes and that sort of thing. And we've also got this new control, the ink toolbar. We had one in before the anniversary edition came out that was in the Visual Studio toolbox, which frankly wasn't very good. This one is great and is really powerful, and it's really, really easy to add inking support to your applications. So let's go off and just do a quick demo of that. So just to really show the basics of getting started, I'm just going to create myself a new project, Universal Blank App. And for inking, you need to be targeting 14.3.93, which is the actual version number of the anniversary update SDK. This is because this is only in the XAML, the features of this one. So pure 14.3.93 app this. And I'm just going to do the simplest of UIs just to show you how easy it is just to enable inking and get started. So I've got off to mainpage.xaml, and down in my grid, I am going to create myself. I said the control was an ink canvas. So ink canvas, we need to give it a name. So of my ink canvas. And actually, that is all we need in order to enable ink. The ink canvas will now fill the whole page, the whole grid. And I'm going to need also on this an ink toolbar so that we can actually change what we are doing on there. Ink toolbar, and this one is going to be horizontal alignment. Let's put it up on the right, and put it on the top left, vertical alignment of top. Let's put a margin on it of 12 just so it's slightly offset. And then the important one here is you actually have to put the target ink canvas. You have to say which ink canvas this toolbar operates against. So this is where we put in the name of that ink canvas just above. And in order to get started, and I totally got that wrong. What I meant to say, my target equals to what I needed to do is X bind that. So X bind to my ink canvas. So that resolves to the element there. Don't worry about the blue squiggles. We're just going to run that, and that should just work out nicely. Now I've got my pen here. Just deploying. So here's my app. And straight away, you know, I now remember I've got that ink canvas on the whole screen, so I can start drawing my lovely piece of work, and I can, here's the, you choose a different color, so there we go, and change the size as well. So there we go, and also obviously got kind of different pens in here. Let's have a purple, fine pen there, so we can choose different the ballpoint, and here's the highlighter, so we can put all this sort of thing, and it's really, really fast feedback. It just feels like writing on paper. It's really, really nice. We've also got an eraser, so I can turn on the eraser, and if I just touch any ink strokes, then they just get removed. But then one of the real nice features as well is we've got this ink canvas, and the idea here now is I can take my other hand and I can just move this ruler around. Let's go and have a ballpoint. And then I just need to go near that. And you can see we got lovely straight lines. You just have to kind of draw pretty near the ruler. And, you know, it's just really great features for doing high-precision inking like that. Now, that's just to get started. So you just see how easy it is to add ink canvas support onto your UI. There's more to it than that, of course. You need to capture the ink strokes and probably save them away. There is a great sample up online called Sites to See, which I'm going to talk a little bit about in my session on Wednesday, which I'm doing with Ken Rosen on building a great user experience. And that has really great first-class inking support where we can annotate on photos and actually draw stuff and save those strokes away and save them in your database and pull them back. So that kind of takes things the whole way. But this just illustrates to you just how easy it is to add support and to get started and to make use of the ink toolbar control. Okay. So that's come with some of the sort of XAML UWP things, but what about, let's look a little bit now about the breadth of devices that you can actually support with the UWP platform right now. And the key thing is we've got support for Xbox One. Now I know at this show it's largely an enterprise development story, but so there may be not so many applications for Xbox One there, or maybe there are for some scenarios. But either way, the point is you can now have UWP apps that will run across all the breadth of Windows devices, including the Xbox One. So we've got this beyond that, just features. We're also adding these new devices. So it's not just the Xbox. Also, of course, HoloLens is out. And I'm not going to cover that in detail in this, but that's also your UWP apps. Even the ones you write for a 2D screen will work just fine on a HoloLens. Obviously, to get the most from that device, then you're into using essentially gaming technologies for building out those 3D experiences. But you can still have these 2D apps can still be run inside the HoloLens, and the user can do cute stuff like go and put it on the wall and this sort of thing, and can resize it and this sort of thing. But we got that support. We've also got the Surface Hub as well. And every Xbox One is a UWP development device, so it's not like a fancy special edition or anything. If you've got an Xbox One, you can turn on developer mode on it today, turn it on and give it a try, and you can deploy apps down to your Xbox. We've also got great support at the other end of the scale as well, the really tiniest little devices, the little IoT ones. And in the anniversary edition, we've extended support to new classes of devices. So we've got the Raspberry Pi 3, which has got a much more powerful processor than its predecessor, the 2. And the latest Minnow board, 64-bit processor. It's also, Minnow board's a lovely device because it's cheap as chips and it has a GPU in it. The Raspberry Pi is not quite so well equipped. So we now got a great choice of real low-end devices, and these run UWP apps as well. It's hard to imagine, but these little things, $50 and less, will run UWP apps. So really exciting at that end of the spectrum again. So, okay, you know, we've got this idea. We can create an app that can run on this wide breadth of devices, from the very smallest through phones and through tablets and desktops and convertibles and all-in-ones, through to big screens like the Surface Hub and through holographic views like the HoloLens. All of these can have one app potentially that could run across all of them. I struggle to see a use case for that, but technically it is possible. But one app running across take a breadth of those, a subset of those devices, doesn't have to mean a subpar experience. You don't have to settle for a lowest common denominator. So we work really hard to make sure that with the UWP platform, you can create experiences on each device that make the app shine on that device and make the most of the particular characteristics of that device. So this is the media app you see on this, and see how it is tailored to multiple form factors and different device families. So that's one of the examples. How do we do this with one UWP app? Well, first of all, we have a great set of universal controls, and these are smart controls. They are very capable controls that will modify their rendering, their layout according to which device they're on, where appropriate. And they are input aware. They also know whether the user is using touch or whether the user is using a mouse and keyboard, and they will often adapt their rendering accordingly. So, for example, a list. if your user is using touch, there'll be more spacing so that the hit targets, if it's a selectable list, are not, you know, you're not kind of doing this little pointy fingernail thing where you're trying to hit tiny hit targets. You actually, it does the right thing and gives you more space to do the right thing there. And we also have the effective pixels and scaling. So our system understands the viewing distance to different devices as well. You know, you look at a phone typically under your nose, and then a tablet's a bit further out, and the desktop's further out again, until you get 10 foot away with the Xbox, and even further for a Surface Hub. So the scaling system allows you to create one app that you don't have to create unique UIs for each of them. You may well want to customize it for each of those devices, but you don't have to. The scaling system will do the right thing, mean you can define one layout that will work on each of those different devices. And the way that you customize it for different devices is using essentially the same adaptive layout techniques that web developers have used for a while. Web developers are used to the idea of having their website viewed on a multitude of different screens. They don't have that control on what it gets viewed on. So it could be on a portrait on a mobile phone, or it could be on a big 25-inch monitor on a desktop. So the web developer knows that their website may be viewed on there, and they've been building adaptive websites for some time. So what we're doing with Windows 10 and UWP is giving those same power, the same control to designers UWP developers, XAML developers, to do the same kind of thing. So we have we have adaptive triggers that will modify the layouts according to perhaps the screen width is the obvious one. So again, I've got a session on Wednesday, the Wednesday session about the great UX user experience is going to dig a bit deeper into adaptive layout in UWP apps. So, you know, we've got all that, and we've got great, great tooling as well. So the Visual Studio and Blend, you can actually visualize your layout on different screens in sizes for different devices and in different orientations. So it's a really, really powerful controls set of tools we've given you to create apps that run across different devices. Now, so I've got, I wanted to have a bit of fun with this particular demo. So we've got, how many of you heard of cognitive services? Quite a few hands going up. Yeah, powerful cloud-hosted services. So up in Azure, we've got these great services that allow you to do really cool things with your applications by calling out to cloud services that are doing things like speaker detection and face recognition. So in the UWP control set, you can do face detection. So there's an API that says that runs on device that can say, okay, what we're looking at here is a face, and it can extract the bit of the face. But it's not powerful to do client-side, recognize who that face is. For that, you need sort of neural networks, you need artificial intelligence in the cloud, and this is where the power of cognitive services comes in, all these AI-backed services in the cloud that just get smarter the more they learn about. So the kind of interesting, up on GitHub, there's this thing called the Intelligent Kiosk Sample. I'm just gonna run it up on my desktop here. And this is deploying now. And there's a whole bunch of, you can actually try out a lot of the cognitive services. You have to go and get API keys. Most of them are on free trial at the moment, and for low usage, they are free to use. But here we can actually set up to try out some of these demos. So we can actually, there's a automatic photo capture. So it looks to me, and it captures my face. And in a minute, it'll tell me, yeah, okay, that's Andy, 47. It's 72% sure about that. I'm afraid I'm gonna veer toward it's actually the 28% is closer, particularly on the age. But there you go, I'll take that, 47, that's nice. And then it can do it again. That's kind of boring. Okay, thank you. Let's have another look at them. Oh, I've gone up to 50 in just... Yeah, and actually, yes, so the emotion API is another one up in the cloud, so I can just do a happy face, and it'll tell me, yeah, that's happiness. And I can do another one, which is a, I don't know what that is, neutral face. So you can have a lot of fun with this sort of thing. Now, this is obviously quite sophisticated. The face detection, that white square, that's in the UWP API set, but the actual, obviously, the sentiment analysis, the emotion stuff, that's where the AI, the clever stuff in the cloud comes in. Now, of course, this, I'm done with you. This is great, and you know, the source is all up on GitHub, so you can take this and you build it into your own applications. This, for example, is how it. This is the code that does the emotion bit. Basically, just the UWP APIs capture the face, and they just send the image up to the cloud, and the cloud comes back and says, "Oh yeah, that's so many percentage disgust, and so many percentage anger, and all the rest of these things." And then we present it in the UI. So you can play with this. It's kind of a lot of fun. Now it will also work on other devices. Now, one of the good things we've got is great tooling across UWP as well. So when they created the HoloLens, when they were creating the HoloLens, they realized that they needed some new tooling to actually connect to these untethered devices. HoloLens doesn't have, you know, a screen. It beams stuff into your eye, and you need to be able to connect to it. So there is, we've actually got on all of, they developed for the HoloLens, and because UWP is the same across the board, it now means it's available and everywhere else. They developed this thing called the device portal. So I'm going to actually plug my, I've got a Lumia 950 here, device. Plug that into my system. And my screen is obviously not on this desktop. That's confusing. No, it's already running. It just doesn't want to come to the foreground. Right. You can die. Yeah, you can die. Close window. It's not playing ball. Just a minute. Oh, this is where you get your API keys. All right, let's protect my screen. Because this demo won't be great if you can't see what's going on. Protect my screen. End that task. All of those of you in the audience who have worked with phones, they're all shaking your heads saying, "Oh, this will never work." Oh, there we go. All right. So this is my phone. Let's go back full screen. And if we go into settings and down to update and security and for developers, then there's the sideload developer mode settings, device discovery, and here's the device portal, which I've got turned on. And you'll see that I can connect to my device portal on HTTPS 10.8.23.76. Is that what I had before? Anyway, so this is the device portal. And if I go over to here, that's not here, this guy. 10. Oh, okay, 10, yeah, it's the wrong one. Okay, so I go to HTTPS, it's managed to change, what network am I on? I've gone on the same as you guys. I was going to connect to the demo Wi-Fi. So I'm now on the demo Wi-Fi. Let's just check what the, I might just have to refresh that for developers. 10.5.9.15. 10.5.9.15. Yeah, okay, here we go. So I'm actually connected on the device portal. I am going to continue to this web page. And this is the device portal, which you'll see on a lot of our devices. I can see all of the apps. You can actually look at, in real time, you can look at the perf, CPU and memory. So this is really, really useful as well. You can do all that sort of stuff. For the apps, I can actually run the same application. Installed apps, I can find my, what was this called? Intelligent kiosk sample. There we go. And I'm going to start that from, you can start apps from the device portal. And here it is running on the phone. So that's real nice as well. And I can do my demos and let's do the Face API Explorer. Oh, that's a bit strange. Okay, now I'm upside down. Hey, there we go. So take a photo of me, and that will try and use another. Let's use the face recognition service in the cloud, and it says I'm Andy, and I've gone down to 49 now, so 49 years of age. That's I've now lost a year in the last 5 minutes. That's really good. But the point is, of course, that that's working just great on the phone. Now, the other thing as well is I have here. So if you think all that kind of stuff is kind of pretty heavy duty, you know, it's not a super sophisticated app, but there's a lot of clever stuff going on. That wouldn't run on an IoT device, would it? Well, yes, it will. So this is a Raspberry Pi 2, so not even the current state of the art. Now, I have actually had to borrow a rather poor webcam, so it's not optimal, but it does work. So let's go over, and the other thing about the Raspberry Pi as well, there's some great tools like the Windows IoT Remote Client is in the store, and this is an app that is effectively a remote desktop for an IoT device. So here we go, I'm connected to my Raspberry Pi, which is here, and this is the kind of home page of a Raspberry Pi. And as with the other one, I've installed that app earlier onto the device. Oh, there's my list of apps. So I can now run my intelligent kiosk sample application again from the device portal, but you can deploy from Visual Studio. It's not to say that you can't. And here it is running on the Raspberry Pi as well. So that's really, you know, quite amazing that a tiny little device can run the exact same app as the other one. In fact, let's use the mouse over here. Let's not use the mouse over here. Okay, carry on using that one. Demos. Like I said, the webcam is a bit. This is the camera that's connected to my IoT device. Let's get that up. So, it's going to let me down. Come on. Come on. Well, like I said, the camera has been misbehaving a little bit. So, unfortunately, that looks like it's going to let me down, that one. It kind of works. And it does actually do all the Motion API because it's connected to the internet. You can run everything. You saw the app startup. I'm having some issues with that webcam, so I'm not going to bother wasting any more time on that. Just as I say that, it starts to sort of come to life of a nature. Yeah, it's trying. Well, all right, but. Every time I move, it does something. Oh, okay, actually it worked. So there you go, neutral, happiness, contempt. That's me looking baffled and why the IoT device isn't working. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, there you go. So we've got what? We've got, we've got an IoT device and we've got Windows phone device. And of course, we've got the intelligent kiosk running on the desktop as well. So that's three. Now, if I had an Xbox here as well, then I could show you running on a fourth device. So this is the same stuff. It's all running on all these different devices. And we've got great tools as well for working with remote devices. It all adds up to a very, very powerful ecosystem and an exciting one to work in. I hope you agree. I do. I love it myself. Okay, so that's is that next to my potpourri of stuff in the anniversary edition. And of course, you know, 75 minutes really isn't long enough to cover everything that's really that's in it. It's a masses of stuff in there. But what I do want to do is just circle back. I said at the beginning of that first demo that the composition is really exciting for the high-performance graphics. So Windows composition, what we wanted is to have the ability for you as developers to create really buttery smooth animations. Now, how many of you have tried using XAML storyboards to animate things? Yeah, and it works, doesn't it? Kind of, you know. Well, this is a new API set for doing that and much, much more. So if you think about the graphics system on the Windows 10 computer. So we've got the graphics layer at the bottom that's responsible for rasterizing text and for doing all of the low-level, painting the stuff onto the screen. And at the top, you've got our frameworks, such as the XAML framework. But what we needed in the middle was something that kind of sat between those two, that gave us more control than you can get when you're stuck just in like the XAML framework. So we've got the visual layer, which is the new bit in this architecture. And if to put those into names, obviously down the bottom, we're talking about working in DirectX. And really, if you're programming directly down there, then you're really kind of into games middleware or real high-performance graphics, and it's kind of hard, and you tend to be working in C++, and it's not easy. But at the top, it really is easy. But in the middle, we've got this visual layer, which is windows.ui.composition. And this is where we have new animations and expressions and new effects and manipulations. And the point is that they all run on the GPU at 60 frames per second. And so they're not actually, they're not impacting your main thread, your CPU in any way. Everything's working on the GPU. So you get really, really great performance and some new stuff that we couldn't do before, such as blur effects, which is computationally very hard to do. But with the new composition APIs, that's something we can do. So we want the performance of animating tens or even thousands of UI elements, and to have animations expand over multiple pages. So it's a very rich control set and something we're investing hard in. The latest release has added a load of great new features. More is going to come in the next releases of the UWP platform. So what I want to do is to circle back actually to my first application, and talk a little bit more about it. Not that one, not the InCanvas. What I want to do is to go back to the Contoso, and let's actually run that again and just have a closer look at what's going on. So look at this application as it comes up. So first of all, we get the splash screen will come up. Here we go. And then once that has gone out of the way, then we've got this fade in and blur. And we're left with that real nice blurry background so that the user's attention is totally focused onto the username and password. And then look what happens when I log in. So I'm logging in here. And watch this little logo here, and also watch the blur background. So first of all, the logo moves right up to the top left corner, which is where it is on the next page, and the blur backed out again as well. And actually what we've done here is we've navigated across pages, but we've got that lovely animation is linking across the two and giving a sense of continuity. And it's also really, really high performance animations. What we want to do is be able to give you, as XAML app developers, the ability to create these real high performance animations simply and easily. So let's have a quick look at the code as to what's actually going on in there. So here we go, in mainpage.xaml.cs, here we go. Now the thing about composition is it on the kind of easy to hard thing, it's kind of in the middle. So it's not as simple as perhaps doing a XAML storyboard. It does look like quite a lot of code, which is a bit intimidating the first time you get into it. But what you have to remember is these are kind of repeated templates. It's a lot of boilerplate stuff. So it does tend to be the same, but essentially you first of all have to get yourself a compositor object, which you get the compositor for the page, which is how you do, which is this. So this will always start, your animations will always start with that. And then here we're creating a blur effect, which is one of those really hard effects to do, a lighting effect. There we go, blur, which is you configure a blur effect, and then we create a blur brush, and then we also apply a easing function so that we have a nice linear application of the blur when it comes in. Then we create ourselves a scalar keyframe animation, which basically says, okay, I'm going to apply this effect over a time scale, which happens to be in 6 seconds in this case. And during that 6 seconds, we're going to animate the blur amount of our blur. And then we create a backdrop brush. And then we create a sprite visual. And then we set the element child visual of the background. And then we go and have a lie down and have a rest, because that's really left us all rather exhausted. But the effect is there. And actually, this tends to happen this way over and over again. So, and then actually, with this one below is a little bit shorter. This is animating the opacity as well at the same time. This only takes 3 seconds. So the opacity was starting. So the first 3 seconds is the fade in. And then for the whole of the 6 seconds, we've also got the blur. So the fade in, and then the blur carries on for another 3 seconds. Now the next bit, this bit where we move up there, is actually in this login click method down here. And this does more of the same. Again, we get our compositor. This, we create a scoped batch, so we can actually apply a number of animations in a batch together. So we get the element, the visual for the username, the password, and the login button. Then we create another keyframe animation, another vector keyframe animation. We start applying, you can actually apply the opacity animation over and over. These are templates, so you can just define it once. So it's a 1 second opacity animation, which we use 3 times to animate the opacity of the username, the password, and the login button. So they fade out. And then we also move the, the vector 3 keyframe here is scaling that logo, and that one offset is moving the logo. And then we basically, and we unblur, we undo that blur amount over 500 milliseconds. We set it back to 0, and then we end the batch, which means basically apply all those animations. So a lot of stuff in there again, but you see the end result. Is really, really nice. So a bit of time spent getting to know these APIs is very worthwhile. Now, if all that looks a bit scary to you, there is something that was released just a few weeks ago called the UWP Community Toolkit, which has some APIs in it, some new APIs in it that can hide a lot of this thing. So I said that a lot of this stuff is boilerplate and is repetitive. So isn't that crying out for somebody to create sort of higher level high-level abstractions of this? Well, yes, exactly. So you can think of this as being the low-level code that allows clever people to create interesting new ways of applying it. And this is what they have done in the UWP Community Toolkit. And there is a sample app in the store, which is effectively the documentation for the UWP Community Toolkit sample app. It has a whole bunch of stuff in it. It has some controls, it has the notifications and modern notifications library, and it has some services for doing things like posting easily to Twitter and Facebook. But the animations, these are higher level abstractions for some of those composition effects. So if you want to do a fade or a blur, then this is perhaps the easy way of doing it. For certain things, you still have to go down to the lower level, but this, for example, if we want to apply put a delay of 1400 milliseconds, blur it over 6 seconds, and blur it to, it's a scale of 10, so we'll blur it to about halfway, and then apply it. That's actually how you can do that. You can see it's blurring, let's blur it all the way. So, and the interesting thing is you can do this in XAML. So this gives you the XAML that you can use to apply that in XAML. Or if you want to do it in code, we've got this toolkitlogo.blur method, which does in one line what we did in code before in lots of other in multiple lines. Now, things like having an animation that blurs and then unwind it, you still have to drop down to the code. So this isn't your answer to everything, but for simple application of some of these effects, this is going to get you a long way. So, and it's really, really high performance. There's also a show, I want to show you the Windows UI DevLabs app, which is not in the store just yet, but this is going to be the standard sample app for all of the animations on here. And you know, there's like thumbnail lighting. You can actually have lighting effects with that with the composition API set. And you can change it to a point specular. There you go. And look at the power. This is all happening using the composition API. It's not impacting the CPU, distant diffuse, what they, so lots of lighting effects. And these, you can actually, let's have a look at some of the other ones. Photo pop-up view is quite interesting. So this is an animation where you can actually have a photo list like this and have this lovely pop-up effect. So, and the sample code for all this is up on GitHub. You can click the link. It's not, as I say, this is a work in progress, not quite out there yet, but it will be very soon. Text shimmer, you want to have a text shimmer effect. There you go, you can have, that's how you do that. Pull to animate. So, not sure how you do that one. Oh, toggle, there it is. Okay, there you go. So there you have a nice in-out animation effect there. So you can see the power and the richness of all of this. The one that I want to show you is a connected animation. So this is the one where you're going from one page to another and you want to have a sense of continuity. So somebody clicks, this is such a common pattern in apps where you have a list view or a grid view, somebody clicks an item and then you go to the detail page. So wouldn't it be nice to have an animation that connects the two? So here I'm going to click on this picture at the top middle here, and it actually animates straight out. We actually have gone to a whole different page here. We can go back, but you actually get that connected animation. It animates out from its position or where it was in the grid and comes into view, and now you're in the detail page, and then it animates back into place again. So that's a real nice effect as well. And the code to do all this is all up on GitHub. Have a look at it. It's a real, real powerful set of stuff. Okay, a little bit about packaging and the store. So first of all, we have actually, we have this packaging format called AppX, which is the kind of, is a zip file, but it's the way that you ship apps up to the store. And we've been doing a lot of work on that. So it was, until recently, it was only for UWP apps. And actually installing it in a developer, if you wanted to send your packaged app to another developer, you had to zip up all this stuff, and it had a PowerShell script in it, and you'd execute the PowerShell script. And it was all a bit too difficult. And also, it was getting in the way of sideload and enterprise kind of scenarios where you wanted to have easy ways of distributing apps internally in your organization. You maybe didn't want to go through the store or the store for business, although there are plenty of benefits for doing that, but maybe you don't want to. So it was kind of a little bit too hard to distribute apps yourself. So we've been investing a lot in the AppX packaging thing and to make it even more inclusive. So it's now supported for Xbox apps. It's now also supported for packaging up desktop apps, and I'm going to talk about that in more detail in a moment. So we're expanding where you can use AppX, and now you can actually double-click on an AppX to install it. So that's a real nice, it makes it much easier in enterprise sideload scenarios to sort of just do casual distribution of apps. They do have to be signed, so AppXs have to be signed with a trusted certificate, so you need to get a signing cert and use that to sign the package. Or it can be you can actually self-sign if you install your root cert on the devices where that's going to be installed. So it enables, you know, this is the modern desktop app installer. We were going to call it the modern software installer, MSI, but unfortunately that one's already been taken. It's now called the modern desktop app installer. And it's actually expanded out into a bit more of a platform. And it also enables up additional scenarios such as the desktop bridge for Windows. And like I said, the Apex must be signed with a cert from a trusted root. But once you've done that, it's really, really simple to install these just with a double click. And also, this platform has enabled us to work with some of our partners who do app packaging products. And I'm going to talk a bit more about that in a moment. But this enables them to integrate Apex creation very easily into their products as well. So if you're used to using one of the other packaging technologies, this has opened the door for them to take part in this. The Windows Store for Business, though, is definitely worth a look for enterprises. It is actually a private store for an enterprise. So that when a user goes into in an enterprise, goes into the store app, they see the normal tabs along the top, but you also see a tab for your enterprise. And your administrators can create a curated list of apps within that store, so it's a real easy way for your users to discover enterprise apps or apps that you want them to be able to find. You can also, as an enterprise, kind of do make an arrangement, do a deal with a ISV, and allow them to distribute specific versions of their apps directly into your business store. So you can actually set up that relationship. Why is this a good thing? Because once things are in the business store, it's not only discoverability, but you also get the really powerful channels for updating. So once you ship an update into the store, or the store for business, then the Windows updater just takes care of shipping that onto all end user devices and makes sure that they get the update cleanly and easily. So it's very, very valuable, and it gives you great tools for IT pros to find, acquire, manage, and distribute apps using workplace identities. And you can also manage licenses through it as well if you've got licenses associated with usage of a Windows 10 app. And it also works with desktop apps, which I'm going to come on to in a minute. Before I talk about desktop apps, I dropped this one in as well because this is kind of interesting. You know that thing where we have you have an email you send out to people and you've got a link to something associated with an app and they click on the link and it takes them to the website and doesn't open the app, and that's kind of annoying. Well, we have a solution for that now. So this is a thing called App URI Handlers, and it's a nice, simple, little, very valuable feature that's really easy. So we are trying to raise awareness of this because we feel that really everybody should be just building this in because it is so simple. So the point here is that links go to the web, not on apps. You open the email with a link and it opens the website. So this is this really annoying scenario that basically the wrong thing happens. It opens up in the browser instead of the native app experience. So we wanted to change that, make that easy to change. And of course, this just ends up with user frustration. And we want to make sure that our users are happy, of course. So we've got this thing called web links, which is it's just fixing this problem, basically. So now all you need to do is put into the root of your website a special file called microsoft-app-uri-handlers.json. And in it, you just have a little bit of information that ties it back to an app which has identity that's been published. And what happens then when what we've built into Windows 10 is that when the user launches a URI in some way, that URI, of course, indicates some kind of identity in the cloud. But what the launcher will do is, first of all, go and look for this Microsoft App URI handlers.json file at that URI. And if it's there, then actually it will redirect to the app rather than going to the website. But you've got graceful fallback. If the app isn't installed on the end user's machine, doesn't matter. It just goes to the web, so you get the expected experience. So it's really quite simple to, of course, this causes happy users. This is what we want. So it increases the app launches. It allows your mailing campaigns to be more effective and drives people to the app, which is what you want to happen. So the scenario for this is, get this right. Okay, right. I just need to move something across and then we will. Okay. So here's the thing. I have got, I've had an email actually from myself, Contos of Cafe Tea for Two promotion. And this here is an email which has a link associated with it, which is contosocafewebignite.azurewebsites.net. So that's the URI. So it's obviously, it's a website I've got up in the cloud. And actually, before I click on that, I want to make sure that the app isn't installed. Here it is. It is actually installed. So let's uninstall it. Contoso Cafe is gone. Thank you very much. Right, now, of course, I'm going to click on my link. And what it's doing is going to open this website, which is up on Azure, contosocafewebignite.azurewebsites.net. And you can see that is the stunning website. This is just a proof of concept, of course. So that is our website. Welcome to Contoso Cafe. But the actual, at that particular, so we've opened that website. Now the app, so before I go on to the code for that, Contoso Cafe Web. And you'll see here, we've got this little Microsoft App URI handlers.json file in the root of it. And all it has on it is the package family name. This is the magic URI of my app. The other stuff, influence that the behavior a little bit more. I'm not going to talk about that. But up in the same solution actually is the Contoso Cafe app. You see that number, E7E78F26, package family name? That, of course, is the identity, the magic number, the package family name of this actual application. So, but the key thing in the manifest, the reason why I've got this open in code rather than in the actual GUI editor, is that we've got this special extension which you can only add in directly, which is a UAP3 extension, category of Windows.app URI handler. So this is the app declaring that it is launchable from a web URI, and this is the website that it is linked to. So if we now just, you need to run the app once, of course, so let's install it again and run our app. So, well, actually, I could have just deployed it. I didn't need to run it. I could have just deployed it, and then the system would have detected that in the manifest and would be ready to launch it. Doesn't matter that it's launched. I'm now going to just let it launch and then close it again and go back to my email. Right, so the app's not running. Now when I click this, it's going to go up to the web, but now we get this disambig thing. So how do you want to open this website? You can use the app or you can still go to the browser. So the user still stays in control here, but in this case, I'm going to go to the app. And if I checked that, then thereafter, it would always just go directly to the app. But I'm going to do it that way. Now we launch into the app. So real simple, all it is, little JSON thing, a little bit of stuff in the manifest. Everybody wins. So that's a real nice, easy thing to add to your applications. Okay, so next, gosh. Keeps on coming, this keeps on coming. Next thing, let's talk a little bit about other ways you can get into the Universal Windows platform. We have a whole bunch of bridges that allow people, and this is what the session, somebody asked me before we started, is there much overlap? So tomorrow's session at 9 a.m. About bringing your existing code to the UWP is all about this stuff. We have all these bridges to enable you to bring Silverlight apps to Windows Phone. We have desktop bridge to bring desktop apps. We have the iOS bridge to bring your iOS code. Hosted web apps, a real cool way of having web apps packaged as UWP apps. And guidance to bring apps from other platforms. But the Windows bridge for desktop is what I want to call out here at this point of this talk, which is this is one of the most exciting features in the whole anniversary update, because this allows classical Windows apps, your WPF apps, your Windows Forms apps, yes, your VB6 apps, your console apps, these can all now be packaged and distributed through the store. So it can be packaged as APXs and can be distributed through the store. So the Windows Bridge for Desktop, what used to be called Project Centennial, is what we're using here. This is of these partners that we are working with. I mentioned about the Apex Wix Install Shield and Advanced Installer. Their tools are now integrating into this stuff and allows users' apps to be packaged as an Apex. Why is this a good thing? Well, once they come through the store, you can then ship updates through the store. So you get all the power of those distribution mechanisms. But there's much, much more as well, because it's a lot more to it than just packaging. These things run in a virtualized environment. So one of the real problems with classical Windows apps is that they tend to blat all over the registry. And the reason why, when you get a brand new Windows machine out of the box and it's fantastic and runs really, really fast for a bit, and then after you've been using it 6 months, it's not so good, is that actually because your registry is just growing and growing and getting bloated with all this stuff that writes all over it. Worst culprit for this is Visual Studio, by the way. Run so much stuff. But this PC rot thing, registry bloat, is one of the reasons why performance degrades over time. And also, you get this DLL hell where different packages get installed and they kind of overwrite DLLs that another package's application is dependent on. And when somebody uninstalls a classical Windows app, they quite often leave something behind. There's sort of still something left in the registry, or some kind of the shadow of it still left. But with this new packaging thing, all that goes, because they are running in a virtualized environment. The user installs them, discovers them from, can install them from the Apex. But key thing about it is they run virtualized. So they're writing, they still run just the same way, but they write to a virtualized registry. They write to a virtualized file system, and they can be completely uninstalled. So they get removed, there is nothing left. So this is going to cure this problem. So we would love it if we move to this. Now, I haven't got time to go into all the fine detail of this, but just quickly to show you a bit about it. Desktop App Converter, you can actually run it against the existing MSI. As long as it wouldn't do a silent install, just install the app and run it through the Desktop App Converter, and that will spit out an Apex. You can then actually, that's the first step, is it's packaged as an Apex, but actually the key thing here as well is you can start adding, once it's got an identity as UWP, you can start adding additional functionality like live tiles, like toasts, and like Cortana integration, things that need to know what your app is. Once they've got an app identity, they get a GUID, and they now are unique citizens in the Windows 10 world. You can also start adding additional code that's using UWP APIs. And then you can distribute it through the store or through mobile device management or through sideloading. You can do this in parallel. You don't have to touch your existing build. You can still, if you've got an app you're still supporting a mix of Windows 7 and you want to support some Windows 10, you can actually create your build. You can fork your build process. Still keep updating your app exactly as it were, you always did. But instead, you can spit out two versions. That can be an Apex version for Windows 10 and a traditional MSI, just the same for your existing user base. But you're keeping the user privacy and safety promise. You don't need to change any code. You can just you're virtualizing it, and when they're running under Windows 10, you get this all the benefits I've been talking about. And over time, you can start adding a whole bunch of new features such as Cortana, Live Tiles, Store, and much, much more. Evernote have just released their first full feature. The first apps have just gone into the store a few weeks ago, including Evernote, very popular package. And as they say, they're very excited about the possibilities for them in opening up to UWP APIs, and they've already taken advantage of live tiles and notifications in their classical Windows application. The tool is in the Windows Store, the Desktop App Converter, and there's also a Visual Studio add-in for Visual Studio 15, which helps with the whole debugging and packaging part of things as well. So a quick little demo for this. Which is over here. Okay. So you can run your MSI through this tool, but you can actually build these things manually yourself. Now, this is a Win32 console app, C#, full .NET console app. But the interesting thing is I've added, there's a NuGet package called Desktop UWP, which allows you to call all of the UWP APIs. So this actually, the main function, doesn't actually do anything except it starts a background thread, thread proc, register background thread.start. And what it does is it registers some background tasks. Now, background tasks are, of course, a pure UWP thing. So here, immediately, I've got an example of a C-sharp console app that's calling definitely a UWP feature, which is background tasks. And actually, what we're doing with this is registering for time zone triggers, and we're registering for time triggers as well. So, and then there's just standard UWP code to do this. And I've added this into my otherwise C-sharp. Now, this could be a VB6 app, or it could be a WinForms app, but it's just a simple console app. When you build it, it actually goes and builds the output into a folder. Let's go off to open the folder, which I've got in the root of my project, which is Centennial Package. And basically the outputs from this, which is the background task WinMD and Pry, which is the code from the background task, which is a universal Windows component, that goes into there. But the key thing is you need to have this apex manifest.xml, which is just this XML file, which is a standard apex manifest. Oh, I've changed desktops just to confuse matters. Not that one. And I can install this, if I can remember how. Which is... I can install this with a PowerShell prompt, which is add-apex x package, register, and then I have the name of the manifest. .xml. And now we're deploying that to my system. It's now installed like a regular any other application. I can go down to find my app, which is called a Win32 app, and I can run it. And now it has registered those background tasks. And if I now just go off to my settings and change my time zone, time and language. Oh, I have to go off quiet hours first, otherwise you won't see anything. Because the code in here, let's change myself to Assumption Islands. There we go. And the background task should trigger. And in a minute, what we should see is a notification. No, come on. That's annoying. Montevideo then. Oh, there we go. Background task triggered. So I don't know why I didn't like Assumption Islands. There you go. So background task. So that was a push notification coming from a background task associated with a C-sharp Win32 console app. But there's some great samples and walk you right through all the kind of stuff you can do in terms of adding more and more interesting UWP features to what we would call a classical Windows app. All right. So... we're out of time now, so I've got a few more talks at this conference. So that's today. Tomorrow we've got Windows Hello 9 a.m. We've also got Michael Crump is doing a deep dive on the Centennial, the desktop bridge, and the other bridges. Raj and Kishner is talking specifically about. Deep dive on Centennial, the desktop bridge at 12:30. And then there's also hosted web apps. And then on Wednesday, I've got a session with Ken Rosen talking about great user experience, a bit more on composition and a bit more about adaptive UI. And on Thursday, I have got another session, 9 a.m., where I'm talking about componentizing apps, having apps cooperating with each other, a family or an ecosystem of apps, which there's some real interesting technologies to enable that kind of thing. Deep dive on security with Windows Hello and website, app, Windows apps and websites with Anoush. Windows Store for Business deep dive. And also the keeping your the data protection APIs about the keeping your work and personal data, and a session about optimizing Windows apps across screens. If you want a deep dive on pen and ink, my friend Jerry Nixon is here on Friday, so he's a great speaker, so I encourage you to come to that. And then a bit more about the Windows Store for Business for building and distributing enterprise apps at lunchtime. There's a bunch of theater sessions as well, so please come and see us at the theater at the in the exhibit hall, and chat to us as well in the Microsoft Showcase area. So I'm going to be there after this talk, and I'll be there obviously for a lot of time, and there's other loads of other people on our team you can come and talk to. Thanks ever so much for coming to this talk. I hope you found that interesting. Please, if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to hear from you your evaluations about your feedback. That would be really great if you could do that. And now I hope you're going to run off and listen to Satya, which should be a great talk to round off the first day at Ignite. Thank you very much.